this is Lyle Park District, Mr. Sims.
Good morning, Your Honors. Brian Sims here on behalf of the plaintiff, Sally Atwell. Today we are here to appeal the dismissal of plaintiff's complaint against defendant Lyle Park District. Plaintiff has raised three constitutional claims against the defendant. First, that the defendant violated her Fifth Amendment right to remain silent. Second, that it violated her procedural due process rights in releasing defamatory information about her to the public media. And third, that the defendant violated the Equal Protection Clause. First, with respect to her right to remain silent, there's no question here that the defendant was conducting an internal investigation and that the defendant, as a public employer, has the right to compel a public employee to cooperate with the internal investigation.
Let me tell you what worries me about her argument here. See what your response might be. There, of course, comes a time when it's right to assert one's Fifth Amendment privilege, and there comes a time under the Supreme Court's decisions when the duty to inform the individual that these answers can't be used criminally, that the public employee arises. But explain to me why Ms. Atwell wasn't really just the victim of bad legal advice from her first lawyer, who seems to have thought that she was entitled to stay out of the investigation altogether with a blanket assertion of her privilege, instead of taking just that next step and showing up at a meeting, listening to the question, finding out if it's even about her. Some questions might give rise to a proper invocation of the privilege, and other questions might not. Didn't the lawyer just misadvise her, in which case wasn't all of this at a stage before the Lyle Park District's obligations arose?
Your Honor, we agree. There's no question that Ms. Atwell got bad legal advice from her first attorney. Our concern, however, arises from the actions of the Park District before Ms. Atwell even consulted with Mr. Schillerstrom. And that arises from, in particular, her face-to-face meeting with Charlene Holtz, an attorney representing the Park District. At that meeting, Ms. Holtz informed plaintiffs that the Park District was conducting an internal investigation and told her that she was expected to cooperate. Then also told her that the Park District had referred the same allegations to the state's attorney's office, and that the state's attorney had convened a grand jury to investigate those same allegations. She then told plaintiff that in light of this, her attorney, plaintiff's attorney, would likely advise her to remain silent, exercise her Fifth Amendment right, and not cooperate. And
you're making a kind of estoppel argument. You're saying that this lawyer, this lawyer for the Park District, kind of trapped Atwell into providing grounds for firing her by not cooperating. Well, but for an estoppel argument to work, you have to show that there was actual and reasonable reliance. And if she consulted a lawyer afterwards, then how could she be thought to have relied reasonably on what this Park District lawyer said to her?
I believe that there are two components. I'm not sure it's exactly an estoppel argument. Our chief,
what is it if it isn't?
Well, our chief consideration here is that the law of this circuit clearly requires that before you discipline an employee for failing to cooperate with an investigation, you have to tell them that what they say cannot be used.
Well, that's a very questionable principle, actually, because there's no general duty to advise people in, putting aside certain criminal areas like Miranda, there's no general duty to warn people, to advise people of their legal rights. But in any event, if you, what the way you described what this lawyer for the Park District said, she put it to she was making a kind of prediction as to what Atwell's lawyer would tell her not to cooperate. And then Atwell's, and then that was what Atwell's lawyer did, and as Judge Wood said, that was a, and as you acknowledged, that was a mistake. But we usually attribute the mistakes of a lawyer to his client, and the client's remedy is a malpractice suit. Why would we attribute this to Lyle?
Well, Your Honor, I believe that this court's holdings in Devon and Conflict.
There's no reasoning in Devon. It's just it's some off-the-cuff comment. I don't get it either. Why you have to tell people what their legal rights are?
But I would add too that I mean, I don't see that case as answering the question: when does this duty arise on the part of the Park District? You know, the day that you employ the person. You know, once a year at the performance reviews, when some problems begin to arise, when they show up at the investigatory hearing. I mean, there are all manner of possible times when this duty to give a speech about the Fifth Amendment consequences and the immunity consequences of cooperation could arise, and I just don't see that case as talking about that timing issue.
You're right, Your Honor. There's no case that explicitly decides this timing question.
Except for the Fifth Circuit case, right?
The Fifth Circuit, however, I believe the facts here are significantly different. First off, what we have here is the Park District telling Ms. Atwell essentially exactly the opposite of what the applicable law is, namely her statements to Ms. Atwell, Ms. Holt's statements to Ms. Atwell, told Ms. Atwell that any statement she would make would be turned over to the grand jury.
That's what you see. That's what your argument was. Not that they failed to warn her, is that they misled her. That's your argument.
Well, not only did they mislead her in that first initial conversation with her, but they continued to. The correspondence between Mr. Schillerstrom and Mr. Simon, the investigator for the Park District, clearly indicates that plaintiff is willing to cooperate with the internal investigation.
But now, clearly, if she consulted a lawyer and the lawyer had said to her, you only have, as Judge Wood was pointing out, you only have to cooperate to the extent of showing up at the meeting and answering questions that are pertinent, and you can't, and your Fifth Amendment privilege won't be impaired by your doing it. So. So if she'd been given that advice, then she would have been protected, right?
Yes.
She wasn't, and that was the fault of her lawyer. So why don't we attribute that to her?
Because we believe that the circuit requires...
But differently, this Devitt case, this Devitt rule, isn't really intended, is it, for cases where the person is represented?
Well, there's certainly no indication in Devitt or in Conflict that it only applies to people who are not represented by attorneys.
What sense does it? I don't understand. Why would you need a warning for people who are consulting the lawyers on the very legal issue in question?
The reason is that we believe that the cases impose an affirmative duty to ensure...
Why? Is there some reason?
Well, the reasoning would be to ensure the cooperation of the public employee.
Well, is there a different reason, though? I mean, if the state's attorney is also involved in the interrogation, a specific question could be posed, and at that point there are two possibilities. Either the employee could answer, at which point immunity will attach, assuming it's, you know, within the scope of a reasonable invocation of the Fifth Amendment, or the state's attorney might say, as sometimes happens, you know, with congressional hearings and others, let's not go into that. I don't want to have my hands tied trying to prove independent source and all these other things. I'd like this one to be a matter for the grand jury. So there's a public interest here in the nature of the questioning, which questions get answered, how far immunity attaches, that I think perhaps goes beyond the individual rights, which might also have a corollary that there's a public interest in the employer telling the employee that there's going to be with respect to these specific questions, you do have to answer, but if you do answer, there will be immunity.
Yeah, that's correct, Your Honor. I'd also like to point out there's no indication here that the state's attorney was involved in the questioning. As was indicated by Ms. Holtz in the first conversation, the implication was that the Park District would be providing information to the state's attorney, not that they would be involved in the investigation. It's clear the investigation was being conducted by the defendant's outside law firm and by Mr. Simon, and not by the Park District.
Now, what is this publicity, on your other issue, what is this publicity you're complaining about? What's this about?
Your Honor, with respect to this, if we look at the time period, what happened, they conducted their internal investigation. They informed Ms. Atwell that she was terminated, gave her a chance to file an appeal from that termination to the Park District Board. In the letter of termination, they identified two bases for firing her, and that she received a salary, knowingly received a salary in excess of what was budgeted, and two, that she failed to cooperate with the investigation. After she responded to those allegations in a written response, which is part of the record, the Park District denied her appeal, said, "You're still terminated." Then the Park District went to the media and released other information alleging other allegations of financial.
So what are these other allegations?
Those,
you're so coy about them in your brief.
Well, they're not specifically included in the record. I can, reveal to Your Honor what they are.
What's the worst?
The worst is that I would say she purchased personal items with Park District funds.
Well, what's the temporal nexus between the her termination and the release of that defamatory information?
It is coexistent. It was after they terminated her, but within the same weeks.
And that's your whole argument? How does that tie back to her termination?
Well, it was involved in her termination. When the Park District went to the public and to the media and said, "We've terminated Ms. Atwell for these reasons," and then they point to other reasons and make other defamatory statements.
So it's your basic argument that if they had given her an accurate list back when they terminated her, she would have had an opportunity perhaps to satisfy them that that hadn't happened or whatever. She would have had an opportunity to address it in the procedures they made available to her, at least at the reconsideration stage where she was participating?
That's correct, Your Honor. She would have had that opportunity. They would have given her a process which to contest it. That does not mean that they still wouldn't have released information.
That
we believe it's defamatory,
yeah.
But she would have been afforded due process.
Okay. Well, you'll probably want to reserve your time. That's your time for rebuttal, Mr.
Thank you.
Mr. Kaye?
Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the Court. My name is Edward Kaye, representing the Lyle Park District.
Mr. Kaye, did the Park District have any idea about the law of the Fifth Amendment and the immunity when it was beginning its discussions with Ms. Atwell, when the Park District attorney said, "Oh, you'll probably want to take the Fifth Amendment"?
Well, I can't say for sure based upon these pleadings, but I can say this, that based upon the laws that exist today, no court has ever held that when a public employee is summoned by her employer to appear at a proper proceeding, and there's been no argument this morning that this interview with Mr. Simon would not have been a proper proceeding to answer questions about her duties, and there's been no argument this morning that Mr. Simon did not want to answer anything but her duties, that the employee can simply refuse on the basis of the Fifth Amendment to show up and not come.
But, it seems to me at a pragmatic level that if Mr. Simon had ever, in the course of this month, said, "Look, you have to come, but you're not the grand jury isn't going to hear about things that you say in this conversation.
Well,
the woman was probably terrified. She hears not only is the Park District is investigating her, but there's a grand jury. Most people would be quite alarmed at that.
And before she even met with Ms. Holtz, she had retained an attorney. On May 6th.
That's critical, isn't it? Because if she didn't have a lawyer, then you would be been misleading her into refusing to cooperate, and then using that as a basis for firing her.
No. I think Your Honor's questions of Mr. Sims cut to the chase in this matter today. She had a lawyer on May 6th, even before she...
I know, that's what I'm saying. It's important that she had a lawyer. If she hadn't had a lawyer, he'd have a good argument.
Well, what I'm trying to get across is the fact that, when I got this case, I read the law, and the law seems pretty clear to me that if you're in Ms. Atwell's position, and you're summoned to appear at an investigation, what you do is you drag her to the investigation with a court reporter in tow, and you sit there, and the investigator asks you a question, and if it tends to incriminate you, you take the Fifth Amendment. And at that point in time, given this circuit's decisions in Conliss, Skindevitt, and Judge Moran's decision in Diakiso, at that time, the employer has to tell you, okay, we're going to advise you of your immunity. I know you've made certain questions to Judge Posner, to Mr. Sims, why should anybody have to advise anybody of their legal rights? That's right, because if I'm advising Ms. Atwell, I'm telling her, they can't use anything. They can't use this against you in a subsequent criminal proceeding.
Do you think her lawyer can be sitting with her during this investigation?
Sure, yes.
So it's not like a grand jury in that respect.
No, and there's been no allegation that she couldn't bring her lawyer. None of that.
Well, it's not so obvious that she could have her lawyer, because, of course, there are some situations where you can. But you would say, in this kind of public employment situation, there's a right to have your lawyer with you?
If you read some of the decisions that are cited in, for example, Diakiso, I think there's a Moran decision. It's not cited in our brief, but if you just read the facts of how that, the employees are summoned to the office of the supervisor, and they come with their attorneys, and there's a court reporter, everything. Everybody wants this on the record. Because we all know it's going to go into court, and the court's going to want to know what happened. And at that time, the employer is supposed to advise the employee of the fact that they're immune, and then
that they're what?
They're immune from their testimony. They'll receive immunity from the testimony, and then at that time, the employer says, "Now we want you to answer." And if the employee,
and see, that's what I'm saying. That giving that obligation to the employer also allows the employer, who may well, maybe not in this case, but as a general matter, the employer may have had discussions with the state's attorney, and the state's attorney can say, if she answers, fine, but here are some lines of inquiry we'd rather not be saddled with immunities about.
But as I understand Garrity, if you're forced to testify.
But that's my point. The state, with a capital S, the Lyle Park District, anybody, makes an informed decision about which testimony you want to elicit under immunity. That happens all the time, with U.S. attorneys before grand juries. There are some things that you would like to get, even though you get it at the cost of giving an immunity. There are other things that you think you don't want to bother with the immunity for.
So you wouldn't ask those questions?
And you don't ask those questions. That's right. So you advise the person which questions you're forcing them to answer with an immunity.
Right.
So,
and that happens, but that happens at the proceeding. That happens,
right.
And that's what Conliss says. You have to have proper questions being asked, and that indicates that there's a proceeding. You show up, and that's where the employer has the duty to advise you. The employer doesn't have a duty to advise you even before you show up.
So let's get back to the fact that this woman, through the interchange with this lawyer, Mr. Schillerstrom and Mr. Simon, does seem to have been under a completely erroneous impression about her vulnerabilities at the hearing. Your view is that we're looking at a legal malpractice case?
Well, I don't want to give anybody an opinion about I think Your Honors have cut to the chase. Judge Moran in Diakiso does state that you know, officers under interrogation shouldn't have to guess about the ins and outs of Fifth Amendment law. Obviously, she had a lawyer here that should have been advising her about the ins and outs of Fifth Amendment law and how to protect herself. But to refuse.
But it doesn't seem like the Park District really wanted to fire her. One sentence from the Park District would have produced her appearance at the hearing.
The balance that's been struck in this area of the law. The balance is between protecting a public employee's right to be free from self-incrimination and allowing a public body to conduct an expedition.
But that doesn't answer my question. My question is, one sentence from the Park District would have produced all the information it wanted, would have produced the very discussion you're talking
about.
But
the Park District is under no obligation under current law to give that one sentence.
Right, so it gets to fire her instead.
Well,
it gets to hide the ball from her.
Oh, there's no hiding the ball. Not at all, Your Honor. Not at all. And in fact, Your Honor, there is Seventh Circuit authority currently today applying the Golden versus McCorkle decision. I've cited it to Your Honors as supplemental authority.
Well, there's nothing wrong with Golden. It's the only question whether, you know, she was entrapped. Let me ask you about the second issue. I don't really understand your argument on that. If after she's fired, the district spreads publicity about her that goes beyond defamation, makes her unemployable, what have you, and it's different accusations from what was the actual base on which she's fired. Well, why isn't she entitled to due process?
Well, first of all, it's a due process is an opportunity to appear and, you know, correct any mistaken impressions maybe the defendant might have. It's an opportunity to address issues. When you look at this issue, Your Honor,
suppose she's fired for being a thief, and then later this Park District says, well, actually, the real reason we want to get rid of her was that she's a child molester.
But the
well, since that hadn't been the basis of the of her on which she was fired, she didn't receive due process at that point.
The due process is a mechanism by which she can address whatever issues the defendant has that it seeks to investigate her or charge her with.
And if they come up with something new after the investigation, she has a new right to a hearing.
Let's go to that first notice that she was given when she was notified that she was being suspended.
But see, the problem is we don't really know what the subsequent publicity was.
But I'm trying to focus, Your Honor, in on the initial notice that was given to Atwell on May 3rd, written notice in which she was advised by the Park District that there was going to be an investigation into unauthorized expenditures of Park District funds.
But they're unauthorized expenditures. If she might be such a zealot for park improvement or something like that, that she made an unauthorized expenditure for a decorative fountain or something like that. That's one thing. The other thing, if she used park money to buy a car for herself.
I understand
right? That's
that, but
very different.
But she had a pre-termination opportunity to address whatever issue.
Whatever, yes, but according to your opponent, it was afterwards when they decided to publicize her discharge, they made up new allegations against
her. But the only issue to determine whether there's been a due process violation is was she given ample opportunities to address the issue?
For the purposes, I'm asking you to assume that the allegations that they make after her termination are not the allegations on the basis of which she was terminated.
It would make no difference if she was given ample opportunities both prior to the termination.
You have to have notice.
But she had noticed.
Well, what about my child molestation case?
Well, I think that doesn't fit the facts of this case.
That's not the question. It's a hypothetical question. What would you do in a case?
Well, what was the initial notice given to her?
The initial notice is that she's being fired because she's a thief.
What was
the subsequent publicity is that the real reason she was fired is that she's a child molester.
What was the initial notice given to her as we have in this case?
I told you.
That was the termination notice.
Oh, forget it. Look. Initial notice, termination notice, all the notice has to do, in my hypothetical case,
to apprise.
Would you not interrupt
me? I'm sorry, Your Honor.
With her being a thief, And then afterwards, they say, no, the real reason was completely unrelated to anything we ever notified her of. It was that we have secret information that she's a child molester.
And they release that to the public.
Exactly.
Yes, that's a I would say that would give someone an argument to say that that could be a violation. But those are not our facts because
since we don't know what this publicity was, I don't know how we know they're not.
Because she characterizes the initial notice she was being investigated.
But you do understand that there is a difference between an unauthorized expenditure for a public purpose and an unauthorized expenditure for a private purpose.
And she characterizes that notice given to her in her complaint as misusing funds.
Well, misusing funds could be either of these, right?
And she also, in her complaint, she alleged that the investigator at this time was hired to investigate financial improprieties. So, I mean,
but financial improprieties come in many different forms. The person can be fired suppose some employee of the court purchased. Thought it would be terrific for all of the judges to have wigs, and so he buys them with federal money, and then he's fired because that's an unauthorized expenditure. That's very different if he used public money to buy himself a new suit.
Your Honor, in answer to your question, can I point to plaintiff's attorney's letter contesting the termination? Because in that letter contesting the termination, plaintiff's attorney not only addresses the salary issue, but he goes on to address other financial issues as well, such as employees who received allegedly bonuses or gift certificates and the like. So, I mean, to say that this plaintiff was not apprised initially of all that the defendant wanted to investigate regarding financial improprieties is belied by her own attorney's letter contesting her termination.
That's a pretty big leap you're making there.
I don't believe so, Your Honor. It's in the record. It's her attorney's letter. She was terminated, and the termination notice specifically says, look at the termination notice, she's being terminated in part because the first part was refusing to appear.
Right.
The other reason was that she was receiving a salary at a rate.
Okay.
Doesn't say anything about bonuses or gift certificates or other forms of remuneration. It says at a rate.
And then they come out after she is terminated and give out other information.
But the point here is that in the termination proceedings, the attorney's letter, her attorney addresses not only the rate issue, but then goes on to address other issues, other financial issues as well, such as gift certificates and bonuses. So, I mean, if the issue is, did she get notice? Did she know what the whole gamut of financial improprieties? I submit that the record does support that, and she had notice, and she had both a pre- and post-termination opportunity to be heard, which satisfies due process.
Okay.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you very much, Mr. Kay. Mr. Sims, how much is what about this last issue? I can't. What exactly is the space between the notice she was given, as interpreted by her lawyer in the letter that Mr. Kay mentioned, and this subsequent publicity that you're complaining about?
I believe if you review the the letter of appeal, you'll see that the discussion relating to the additional remuneration, gift certificate, bonuses is there simply to point out that there are other employees who are allegedly receiving salaries or remuneration in excess of the amount that was budgeted by the Park District Board. And the information there was not included to address these other allegations that came out after they fired Ms. Atwell.
Mr. Sims, my problem is that, as I understand what we seem to be discussing here, the position of the Park District is that the initial notice was sufficiently broad to encompass all of the reasons that the Park District had, and thus there is no failure of notice or due process, and that your position is, no, indeed, there are things that fall more on the side of Judge Posner's hypothetical example that are sufficiently different that she never had an opportunity to address them. But what I can't, it's a mushy thing to try to review because I can't find anything so much as a proffer in the record from you to give us a better idea of what it is you're complaining about. And the most that you said in your brief was, well, if somebody had said to you you needed more detail, you would have been happy to file more detail. And as far as it goes, that's all right, but it's a very hard contention at this stage on this record for us to evaluate, or at least for me to evaluate.
I understand that, Your Honor, and at this point I regret not having pled more of the evidence that we would have produced.
Or at least put some sort of proffer in, you know, this is what we're, I mean, there's some allusion to 25 articles in the newspaper, and I didn't bother to go search through Nexus to find them, but it's a hard posture of the case right now.
I understand that, Your Honor. Our position is that there are additional allegations that were made that clearly do not fall within the two stated reasons for terminating plaintiff, and our position would be that the nebulous initial notice doesn't really encompass these, and that even if it somehow did, the Park District's actions were what prevented her from cooperating with the initial internal investigation. For these reasons, Your Honor, we ask that this court reverse the judgment of the district court and allow plaintiffs to file an amended complaint.
Okay, thank you very much to both counsel. This case for